I tell you, folks, Twitter is a great place to get your news. But also, it's full of people who just throw things against the wall and hope that something sticks. I'm looking at a tweet here from ML Football. This account has 326,000 followers. That's reporting that the Kansas City Chiefs are among the co-favorites to trade for superstar defensive end Myles Garrett. No shot.
I mean, you got to give up Chris Jones in that and be kind of, but yeah.
I don't think you have to give up Chris Jones in that sense, but you have to give up something. And how are you going to afford it?
That's more what I was saying about the contract situation there. But yeah, Myles Garrett has a hefty contract.
There's just no way. I mean, that is a very anti-Brett Veach, Andy Reid sort of a move. Right. I mean, like the trade for DeAndre Hopkins, that was the guy that was sort of like you had seen a dip in his productivity. You haven't seen a dip in Myles Garrett's productivity at this point. He is one of, if not the best edge rusher in the National Football League today. Getting to the passer and shutting down the run. You put him and Chris Jones together. Yeah, great. Look, put him on one side, put Karloftis on the other, and you got Chris Jones and Turk Wharton or, you know, Pinnell or whoever you want next to Chris Jones on the interior, that immediately becomes a top three defensive line in football. Is it going to happen? No. Don't fool yourselves, all right? Don't start to believe that level of tomfoolery, because that's what it is. It's tomfoolery. I don't expect it to happen. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber joined by Jacob Mustard. Our text number is 913-586-7965. We got a few messages that I want to run down here. At 816 says, why would you blow over that Rams have six designated international home stadiums? I'd like to hear more about that. I don't even know what it means. So no, I really can't go more in depth about it because I have no idea what it means. 785 says that week 18 already doesn't matter. To some it doesn't, to others it does. It just depends on the season. If you've got three teams who are all coming into the final week of the season 9-7, and there's only one playoff spot remaining, or maybe two playoff spots remaining, then it does matter for those people. But for the Kansas City Chiefs, no, it doesn't matter. It's an extra week of rest that you might be able to get.
I mean, the Lions-Vikings just happened. That was for the number one seed.
Exactly. Another person says, guys are already sitting the last week of the season and get mad. What happens if they sit 2 weeks in a row? It's a boring product. I don't think I've ever heard the NFL referred to as a boring product. It's an 18-game regular season is just not safe, in my opinion. Yes, we all sit here and we're like, oh, well, they get paid $40, $50, you know, $20, $30, $40 million. Some of these guys do. Some of them do. Not all of them. They don't all get paid that. And what they're doing, yeah, it's a game to us, and we would all love to be doing it if we were in their shoes, but it is a physically demanding sort of a thing. I mean, it's grueling for those guys because it never ends. Right? Yeah, you're going to hit guys for 22 to 26 weeks a season between, you know, mini camp and preseason and then the regular season and the playoffs if you get there, but then it's weightlifting all season long. You got to deal with media scrutiny and all the things. And I just don't like the idea of the 18-game regular season. I think from a health and safety standpoint, it's the wrong move. That's just my opinion. Got a 913 says, if that does happen, it will be likely that almost every team will do one of those training camp scrimmage games with another team. That's a possibility, certainly. You see teams across the league do it a little bit. It does equate it. So there have been injuries with that. There's injuries with everything. I know it's the game of football. Understandable. I don't know. A lot of fist fights seemingly occur with those early season, those like preseason scrimmage things. Who was it? DeAndre Hopkins and somebody who were like going at each other, and then D Hop crushed him on a route so bad that he like tore his ACL during a preseason game. I can't remember for the life of me who that was.
I can't remember his name either, but it was one of the good or better defensive corners, defensive backs, and it was an old age thing where he was past his prime and was trying to stop a prime D-hop, and that's not a tool for success right there.
No, not at all. But, you know, it's interesting. Somebody says if you increase the number of games, you need to increase the roster size. very well could, right? A 53-man roster, maybe you increase that to 60 or 65. I don't know. I think it's a very real possibility. The NFL certainly has the money to afford putting another 10 or 12 guys on a roster. No doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah, and it was D'Angelo Hall.
It was D'Angelo Hall. When he was with Houston, and D'Angelo Hall was playing for Washington at that point,
Washington,
correct?
Washington, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that iconic sort of clip. Was that from like a... Is that like a... what's that? Hard Knocks. Was Hard Knocks following Washington or Houston for that? Or was that just like a clip that somebody was at training camp and caught that? Because like him and D'Angelo Hall got in each other's face and there were like punches thrown in the whole thing. Everybody broke it up. And then like two plays later, D-Hop dismantled D'Angelo Hall on that route.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was Hard Knocks. I think it was just somebody who captured the moment just as a fan on the field, or maybe a professional, somebody there to record these scrimmages.
Yeah, man, it's tough. It's tough, but don't buy into some of this stuff, folks. I'm sorry. I would love to see it, and if it does happen, I will wear that egg on my face proudly. I don't see a scenario where Myles Garrett wears a Chiefs uniform. Like, if somehow, some way, the Kansas City Chiefs were able to swing a trade for Myles Garrett, I think the NFL would reach like Chris Paul to the Lakers level. Like the NFL might actually veto a trade for the first time ever. Like, I just feel like the rest of the league, the other 30 teams in the National Football League, would collectively lose their minds, and their fan bases would lose their minds to such an extent that Roger Goodell may actually have to step forward as the commissioner of the league and say, you know what? I'm sorry. We just cannot have this happen. This is not allowed. I'm sorry. Like, this is, especially if they win on Sunday. Can you imagine? Chiefs three-peat and then trade for Myles Garrett. Minds across the NFL landscape would melt. Melt. You think Twitter is a cesspool of crap against the Chiefs right now? It would get infinitely worse if they were to win this game on Sunday and then trade for Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally one of those where the rich get richer, and, you know, that aspect of, I mean, it comes to the end of the first round of the draft every year, and the Chiefs still hold their first overall pick, and it's like, who are they going to, or first round pick, and it's like, who are they going to grab? And then it's like, this year they grabbed a speedster, which is exactly what they needed for their offense, and it's like, the Bills allowed that by trading back with them, and, you know, it just, whoever wins the Super Bowl is going to have a target on their back. No matter what they do, no matter what moves they make, it's just, it happens and it comes with the territory.
Yeah, no question about it. Somebody else in the text line just said, I know you're talking football, but Jimmy Butler just got traded to the Warriors. Former KU player Andrew Wiggins going to the Miami Heat. Yes, if you're just now joining us, we were talking about that in hour number one. Jimmy Buckets going to Golden State. A lot of guys getting dealt to other places. Dennis Schroeder's going to the Jazz. Kyle Anderson's going to the Raptors. But yeah, Jimmy Butler going to the Warriors. He's also signing a two-year, $121 million extension. Miami's also getting a protected first-round pick in the deal as well. And it's interesting, I'm scrolling social media. I saw a tweet from Overtime. There was a fan sitting courtside behind the Miami Heat bench tonight, currently, who was explaining to Javier Yaquis and Tyler Hero and Kevin Love. He was breaking down the trade to them in real time during a Miami Heat game. And they're like listening intently to what's happening with Jimmy Butler as it's going on. But yeah, huge breaking trade as Jimmy Butler going to San Fran or going to the Bay Area to join Steph Curry as they continue to try to make the most out of the last few years that Steph's going to be playing in the NBA. He's having a good year, but outside of him, the Warriors are struggling in some respect, right? I mean, Steph's averaging 22-4-6 this year. And Wiggins was actually the second leading scorer for Golden State, averaging over 17.5 a game. Jonathan Kuminga is their third leading scorer, but he's only played in 32 games and he's only started 10.
Yeah, so, I think the Warriors' hope for Kuminga was to be and fill that Andrew Wiggins role. And, you know, maybe this timeline with Butler kind of moves that up if they've been seeing him ramp up. It's hard to see if he's, you know, not playing games.
Right.
But at the end of the day, their hope is that him and I'm going to butcher the last name, Pajinski or whatever.
Pajinski,
their younger draft picks are going to fill these Steph Curry and you know, Klay Thompson roles that are being voided now.
Yeah, I like the fit for Golden State. I like, you know, Curry at the one, seemingly at the two is Buddy Hield, and then you've got Jimmy playing the three. I would like to see Kuminga play the four, and then I guess either Trayce Jackson-Davis or Kevon Looney play the five. I'm sorry. I think Draymond Green at this point in his career is a guy who needs to come off the bench. That's just my feelings on the matter. This Warriors team, though, very similarly to the Warrior to the Lakers, and we'll see what they make happen in the next couple of days with the trade deadline looming. I think they both need bigs. They need rebounding, right? I mean, I think that you could try to get a hold of like the Utah Jazz and see about Jakob Poeltl. The Chicago Bulls are paying a lot of money to Nikola Vucevic, who's having a great year and has since he arrived in Chicago, but they're not having any real team success.
Try to grab Walker Kessler, maybe.
Yeah, Walker Kessler certainly is a possibility with Utah. Maybe you try to kick the tires on like a Jakob Poeltl or something like that. Some big that's averaging double-digit rebounds. He doesn't have to be a primary number one scoring option by any means. Just somebody who can crash the glass, I think, would be very beneficial to the Warriors. But yeah, we talked about that in hour one. Talk a little bit more about it here in hour number two. Some other storylines coming out. Of course, we've got Mizzou basketball. We've got going on right now, actually, or was going on. Yeah, nearing its end, and barring a late comeback from Mizzou, sounds like it appears that they may fall tonight on the road against a very, very good opponent. We may talk a little bit more in depth about that one when we come back. K-State had a big game yesterday. KU getting set for some games going on later this week. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber joined by Jacob Mustard. This is your home for Kansas City sports. Tigers almost pulled it out. Came up just short, did Dennis Gates and the University of Missouri tonight. They were in Knoxville taking on the fourth-ranked Tennessee Volunteers, and they wind up falling late, 85-81. Mizzou was actually up at the break. They were up for 34-28, excuse me. So they had a six-point lead at the end of the first half, but Tennessee went on a offensive tirade in the second half, scoring 57 points in the last 20 minutes of action to win it by four. Volunteers shot 50% from the floor. They shot 10 of 15 from behind the three-point line and made 21 free throws as a team. They out-rebounded the Tigers. They had more assists in this game. They had more turnovers. Most insane stat of this basketball game for Mizzou. Three turnovers. Three. Like 40 minutes of college basketball, Mizzou turned it over three times in the entire game. Tamar Bates finished with 22 points for Mizzou. Tony Perkins had 16. Caleb Grill off the bench finished with 11. He was 4 of 5 from the floor, 2 of 3 from behind the arc, so he continues his hot shooting. But Mizzou in that second half just couldn't do enough defensively to slow down Tennessee. They wind up losing by 4. So the Tigers are now 17-5 on the year. They are 6-3 in the SEC, currently stand as the number 15 team in America. And their next game will be a little bit later on this week on Saturday. They will be playing 10th-ranked Texas A&M at home. How about that for a four-game stretch? Last week, you played 16th-ranked Ole Miss, and you went on the road to play 14th-ranked Mississippi State, and you beat them both. Then you go on the road to play Tennessee in Knoxville, the number four team in the country, and now you have to play 10th-ranked Texas A&M. That's how talented the SEC is this year in college basketball, which is pretty jarring. I think it's safe to say that the SEC is better in college basketball this year than they were in college football. I don't think that is too drastic a statement to make. Another big one that we had last night, we got preempted during the 8 o'clock hour of our show last night because K-State had a road matchup against Arizona State. And I'll tell you what, I mean, Jerome Tang is fighting for his life with that Kansas State Wildcats team. And they're kind of playing like it right now. K-State gets a 71-70 win against the Sun Devils yesterday on the road. Leading scorer for K-State was David Ingesson had 22. Max Jones had 15. Brendan Housen had 12. Coleman Hawkins had 11. Ingesson had 22 on 8 of 11 shooting. He also had 8 rebounds in this game. Wildcats shot 46% from the floor, which isn't great, but Arizona State only shot 38% from the floor. So they did a great job defensively in this one. And for K-State, that now marks their fourth consecutive win since they lost 6 in a row, starting with TCU on the road about a month ago. They lost at Oklahoma State, at home against Houston, at home against Texas Tech, on the road against Kansas, and on the road against Baylor. Since that Baylor loss, they're 4-0, and they beat two ranked teams in that time as well. They beat West Virginia at home, and of course, last weekend, they dominated third-ranked Iowa State on the road. So a huge turnaround for Jerome Tang and his Wildcats as they're kind of trying to right the ship at the moment. After a really troublesome start to the season, of course, KU on Monday dominated Iowa State in their home state or their home arena at Allen Fieldhouse, 69-52, at a tremendous defensive effort in that game. And KU will not be back in action again until Saturday when they will match up against K-State. So that's going to be a fascinating game. That one is in Manhattan. So that one's going to be fun to watch. It's a 1 o'clock tip. It's pronounced Gesson. I don't know. I can't say that I watch K-State basketball on a regular basis. I apologize. Regardless, he had 22 points last night. So give him all the credit in the world for having 22. I just didn't pronounce his name right. You guys are not helping. Somebody says it's Gesson. How do you pronounce it then? You got guys in the text line, they don't even know how to pronounce it. So why don't you get off my back about it? All right. KU, K-State on Saturday. That should be an interesting game to watch. Other college basketball news. Dick Vitale is going to be back on the mic. He will be doing this Saturday's matchup between Duke and Clemson. 6 o'clock tip off, 6 Eastern tip off on ESPN. So 5 o'clock Central time after Dickie V has been dealing with cancer for, good Lord, it seems like the last 4 years now. It's going to be fun to hear him back on the call, calling a Duke team that is incredibly talented. Dude, Cooper Flagg is an absolute freak of nature for that Duke Blue Devils team. He's probably the surefire number one pick in this year's draft. And you got the University of Arkansas trying to bounce back. They're playing Texas right now. That game just got underway. So a little bit of college basketball news to kind of tide you over for the time being. And I'm just trying to keep track, right? Because we're nearing that point in the NBA stretch where you could get trade deadline news in the NBA, right? That's how close it's come. We're still not to that point yet. Got some college football news that came out today as well. Of course, earlier this week, Chip Kelly left Ohio State to become the offensive coordinator for the Las Vegas Raiders. So he's going to try to give the NFL another shot, it sounds like. We'll see how it works out. So Ohio State was looking to find a replacement at offensive coordinator, and they found their guy in Brian Hartline, who has been their longtime wide receivers coach. He's been there since 2018. He was the co-offensive coordinator this past season. So he kind of takes a seamless transition to becoming the team's primary offensive coordinator. He played at Ohio State and then had a good stretch in the NFL, played for 6 years, most of that with the Miami Dolphins. He played for the Browns, I think, for a year. So he played a total of 7 years in the National Football League. But he's known as an incredible recruiter and developer of wide receivers. I mean, look across the NFL right now at the amount of Ohio State wide receivers that are making things happen in the NFL. Marvin Harrison Jr. and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and the list goes on and on and on. You know, you had Emeka Abuka, who had a good year this year. Jeremiah Smith, who could probably be the number one wide receiver in this year's draft class if he was allowed to declare, but he's only a freshman, so he's going to benefit from that one dramatically over the next 2 years, his first couple of seasons. So that one, I think that's a good move for Ohio State, though. You don't want to rock the boat too much, bring in somebody outside the program after you just won a national championship. That's a guy who's been under Ryan Day for quite a while. makes sense. Absolutely makes sense for him to be a part of that. Another storyline, this one in the NFL, as three men have now officially been charged by a federal grand jury in connection with the burglary that took place at Joe Burrow's home in Cincinnati during the NFL season. All three men were charged following an issue on February 3rd. The three men are Chilean and part of a South American theft group. They were charged with transporting stolen goods interstate and falsifying records in a federal investigation. So not sure what to make of that one in its entirety, but a crime being, I don't know, overseen now at this point. I'm not sure how exactly to dissect that one too much, but it's news. Three men being charged and indicted in the theft that occurred at Joe Burrow's home earlier in the year. So that one's kind of an interesting one to follow for the most part. I got a lot more to talk about, but it mostly surrounds the Super Bowl. We're going to talk Chiefs-Eagles here in the final half hour or show that we've got on tonight's program. Earlier today, Patrick Mahomes was asked about Joe Tooney. And Mahomes said, quote unquote, he is a gold jacket guy. So what I want to do when we come back, Jacob, is I kind of want to look down these two rosters for the Chiefs and for the Eagles and kind of determine just how many Hall of Famers, as of this point, are going to be competing in this game on Sunday. Right? We can talk a little bit about some guys that are on a Hall of Fame sort of trajectory or guys that could become Pro Football Hall of Famers, but it may not be at that point yet. Just determine how many of these guys have gold jacket resumes at this point in their careers. We'll do that when we come back. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber joined by Jacob Mustard. This is your home for Kansas City sports. Xavier Worthy's a guy that, you know, if he continues along his trajectory, it's impossible to say after almost a full season in the National Football League, but he's had quite the start to his career. I want to take some time here towards the end of our show to kind of dissect just how many guys playing in this game on Sunday could wind up in Canton, Ohio as members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Earlier today, Patrick Mahomes, talking about Joe Tooney, referred to him as a, quote, gold jacket kind of guy. And it raised a question for me to kind of take a look and see, okay, how many guys on these two teams between Kansas City and Philadelphia playing in Super Bowl 59 on Sunday could wind up in the Hall of Fame, right? And I think it kind of goes by tier. You've got guys who are no doubt locks to be Pro Football Hall of Famers. You've got guys who we believe should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but may or may not get in. And then there's guys that have more work to be done. So I'll start with the guys who I believe are locks to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Do you want to go by teams then, or are you going to do?
Yeah, we'll go by teams, I suppose. I think locks for this, and I'll preface this by saying I don't know if there's anybody on the Philadelphia Eagles that is a no doubt lock to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame at this point. I think there are guys that deserve to get in.
We'll get to them,
but I don't know if they're locks. Patrick Mahomes is a lock, first ballot, no question in anybody's mind, right? Travis Kelce is a lock, first ballot, no doubt in anybody's mind. I believe Chris Jones is a lock to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Those are really the only three guys I think playing in this game on Sunday who, as of right now, at this point in their careers, are Pro Football Hall of Famers. That's just my view.
My one from the Eagles would be Lane Johnson.
See, now, Lane Johnson, I would put in that second tier.
Yeah, I think he teeters between those two. I just think he's had such a good career. Yes, it's going to take a couple more years, but there's no, outside of a drastic injury, there doesn't seem to be a dip in his production year after year. I mean, if he called it now, it would be tough, but, you know, I think he gets, I'd give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, for guys that I think should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but they could be up or down, you know, if they put more years of production on themselves, then absolutely, I think they get in. Lane Johnson's one of those guys. He's been an All-Pro twice. He's been to six Pro Bowls. He's won a Super Bowl, but I think that there could still be some questions that surround him. I also, and as much as I applaud Patrick Mahomes for his statement, and I think that this season has certainly given people more of an insight into just how good Joe Tooney is and his versatility. I don't think he's a surefire, no doubt Hall of Famer just yet.
I disagree. I think he is. Just his resume with the Patriots and then coming over to the Chiefs. I think he has the titles, which, you know, doesn't mean a ton for anybody really, it seems like, except quarterbacks and, you know, some wide receivers to an extent. But, you know, I think he does have the resume to be in there. And I think Mahomes' comments were pretty true.
It's tough for me to go that route because he's only been to three Pro Bowls. He's only been voted to the Pro Bowl three times. He's only been voted All Pro twice, and it coincides with the last two seasons. He's going to be, I mean, before next season starts, he'll be 33 years old. If he can put another 3 or 4 years on this, maybe. But to ask an offensive lineman to play until he's 36, 37, maybe the titles can swing him over the top. I don't know. Because he won, what, two? Did he win two Super Bowls with the Patriots? And he's won two now with the Chiefs. A win on Sunday would give him five Super Bowls. That could definitely sway some folks.
I was going to say, I think that alone would definitely... I mean, looking at a resume when you tell the Pro Football Hall of Fame, hey, here's a guy who is dominant at his position, was able to change positions. I know that was just recent, but be able to be an integral part of an offensive line and be really the dominating force, and he has four titles, if not five here right in a little bit, I think that gets him in itself.
I think Darius Slay is another one who could be a Hall of Famer, but I'm not entirely sure. A win on Sunday would do a lot for his career.
Saquon as well.
I think Saquon's a Hall of Famer. I would say he's got an even better case than Darius Slay does at this point. Slay's got one All-Pro to his name. He's been to six Pro Bowls. Saquon, he's been unbelievable. And Saquon, on top of the fact that he's going to be a Pro Bowler this year, right? He's a Pro Bowler. He was first-team All-Pro. He is, barring something completely unforeseen, he's going to be the Offensive Player of the Year in the NFL this year. He was the Offensive Rookie of the Year in 2018. I think he'll be the Offensive Player of the Year this year. Shoot, there might still be an outside chance he wins MVP. I don't know. I doubt it. It's a quarterback-driven award nowadays. But I would say absolutely Saquon's a guy that needs to be in that consideration.
Brandon Graham as well.
Brandon Graham, I don't see it. He's only been to one Pro Bowl.
True.
He has other individual accolades in his entire... Never been an All-Pro in his entire career. He's played a long time, and he's got good numbers. He's got, you know, he's got over 100 career sacks and either this and that and the other. But in terms of Pro Bowl, All-Pro, and individual honors, I just don't think he has enough at his disposal for that.
Yeah, and I think that's true when you stack him up against... Like, he's no doubt one of the best dominating era defensive end, edge rusher, defensive lineman. If we're being honest, he plays pretty much everywhere for them. But stacking him up against Hall of Fame talent, he may just fall short, and that could be something where, you know, maybe he sneaks in on his last attempt, or, you know, he may not be in it at all.
I think another, going down to that next tier of guys that I think could be Pro Football Hall of Famers, but they have more work to be done, Harrison Butker. I mean, he's the most accurate kicker as of now, percentage-wise, in the history of the National Football League. A lot of it was because Justin Tucker had some on-field problems this year, and now, of course, is having some off-field problems that he's having to contend with. Neither here nor there. Butker, for his career, is over 88.5% on his kicks in his career. What's mind-boggling to me is that the man's never made a Pro Bowl, never been selected to a Pro Bowl. And he's kicked at over 90% three times in his career, including last season when he was 33 of 35 from field goal range and he didn't get into the Pro Bowl.
It was hard to dethrone Tucker. I'm not sure who exactly, if it was Tucker that made it over him, but from people's perspective, it was Justin Tucker is the number one kicker in the AFC, and it was case closed until his slip-ups this year.
But I look at it from the standpoint of... He's already won three Super Bowls. He has made kicks in the biggest moments that a kicker could possibly need to make a kick in. You know, in his playoff career, he's 90% on field goals. 90%. He is 36 of 40 in his playoff career in postseason play. That's remarkable. You look at guys like Adam Vinatieri and Steven Gostkowski and some of these kickers that have, you know, put themselves in position to make the Hall of Fame. Yes, their regular season numbers were great, but what made them special was what they did in the postseason. And I think that could maybe sway some folks into potentially putting him into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, right? Kickers have lengthy careers in the National Football League also, by every stretch of the imagination. And he's not even 30 yet. He's the same age as Pat. He's 29 years old right now and has already won 3 Super Bowls. He's got the longest made field goal in the history of the Super Bowl. He's got the most made field goals of any kicker ever in the Super Bowl. He broke the NFL record for most field goals made by a rookie with 38 in his first year in Kansas City back in 2017. Again, I have no idea why the guy's never made a Pro Bowl. He was the NFL scoring leader in 2019. I think that by the time his career is done, he's, because kickers can go until they're 36, 37, 38 plus.
Wasn't Vinatieri playing, I know, at a way decreased level, but I think he was playing in season whatever at age 41, 42, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, Adam Vinatieri, when he retired, it was in 2021, he was 49.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah, he got into the National Football League in 1996 and was an every week kicker until 2019. Kicked for 10 years with the Patriots from 96 to 2005, and then he was with the Colts from 2006 to 2019. 24 years that man kicked in the National Football League.
And a lot of them for contending teams and the playoff, you know, playoff chances, Super Bowl wins. You know, he was attached to a lot. I mean, it was very comforting knowing you had Vinatieri and Gostkowski for those dynasty runs. It's great when you can rely on a kicker, and I think Butker has made a case for himself for as long as his career keeps going and he doesn't have any, you know, unforeseen slips like he just did this season.
I think that another one of those guys that has more work to do is A.J. Brown for the Philadelphia Eagles. His numbers, if we talk about Mike Evans as a guy who, in my view, should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I think A.J. Brown is on a similar sort of trajectory. In 6 seasons now in the National Football League, he's only had 1 year where he didn't eclipse 1,000 receiving yards. And that was his 3rd year in Tennessee. He got hurt. He played in 13 games, but he still had 63 catches for 869 yards. I mean, the three years he's been in Philadelphia have been remarkable. Almost 1,500 yards in his first 2 seasons, 11 touchdown catches in 2022, 7 last year in 23. And then this season, he's got another 7. 67 catches for 1,000 yards. He didn't even get to 100 targets this year because they were so reliant on the run game with Saquon and everything else.
It just shows touchdown. How efficient he is too.
Yeah.
And I think on the Eagles side, I know I love me some offensive line. Lane Johnson, we mentioned, I think, you know, it's very, very early, but the lines of Creed Humphrey, Jordan Mailata, if they keep producing at this level, and then Cam Jurgens, if he can, you know, be the protege for the Kelce brother for, 15 years. Mm. You know, that's a lot to ask. That is. But, you know, we're talking about some people who are at the peak of their position already.
Right.
And if they can keep continuing that.
Yeah. So I think A.J. Brown is one of those guys. He's a 3-time Pro Bowler. He's a 3-time All-Pro already at this point in his career. He's 27 years old. So he still has some time to make some things happen. I'm not buying into the Jalen Hurts as a Hall of Famer conversation just yet. I know he's taken, you know, he's been the starting quarterback for a team that's gotten to the Super Bowl twice, but he's got a lot more that he has to prove to me before he's even anywhere near that category, especially with the quarterbacks that are in the NFL today, right? Mahomes is a Hall of Famer. Lamar Jackson is a Hall of Famer. Josh Allen and Joe Burrow certainly have more of an argument to this point, in my opinion, than Jalen Hurts has.
Oh, I don't think you're off by that at all. I mean, when you're listing the top 5 quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts, you know, he sniffs that fifth, maybe. Yeah. But, I mean, you can argue players like Herbert, even an old Matthew Stafford, and other players knock him out of that spot.
Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
That's a guy who's been to two Super Bowls. He won one, and he was a multi-time Pro Bowler and All-Pro. I think that you look at the last generation of quarterbacks in the National Football League, right? You had Manning and Brady and Breeze, Aaron Rodgers, right? He's going to be a part of that generation. Big Ben, a part of that generation as guys that are going to get into the Hall of Fame as starting quarterbacks. If there's only five or six max quarterbacks per generation that puts themselves in Hall of Fame consideration, I just don't think Jalen Hurts has pushed himself into that category yet. Now, a win on Sunday would certainly change some hearts and minds, no doubt about it.
Especially if he goes out there and throws for 300 yards, yeah. Which is not the game script we're expecting.
Right.
But
if he goes out and wins them the game, because let's face it, if the Eagles would have won that Super Bowl 2 years ago, he would have been the Super Bowl MVP. He was great.
No doubt. I think he outplayed Mahomes by all the numbers and indications.
And I would agree. At least by the numbers, he outplayed Mahomes. But what makes Mahomes so special was the biggest moments of the game. Mahomes rose to the occasion, and Jalen Hurts seemed to kind of shrink under the pressure. We'll see if that continues on Sunday. I don't know. And then the last guy I've got, as somebody who's got more work to be done, is Creed Humphrey. I think Creed Humphrey will be a Hall of Famer by the time his career is done.
What about D-Hop? What is your take on that? Because, you know, he did so much with such little quarterback play. I know, you know, we're running short on time, but he makes a good case for it.
He does. It's just hard with DeAndre Hopkins because he's got 3 All-Pros. He's been to 5 Pro Bowls. I mean, the wide receiver position in the NFL nowadays is fascinating to me.
It is.
Because, I mean, now you look at like Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson and Tyreek Hill. Those are probably the 3 best wide receivers in football, right? I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind. But for a while there, wide receiver in the NFL was sort of like cornerback in the NFL now, where it was like for 1 year, D-Hop seemed like the best receiver in football. And then the next year it was DeAndre Hopkins. And then it was Cooper Kupp for a little while there. And
Mike Evans tossing his name
in
there.
Yeah, it seemed to be this revolving door of guys. I think a Super Bowl win on Sunday could do a great deal for his case. DeAndre Hopkins is one of those guys, now that you mention it, the more work needs to be done with DeAndre Hopkins.
And who knows how much time he has left.
With the MCL tear and the injury issues that he's having to contend with, I don't know. That's a tough question to ask. But I am of the belief that Creed Humphrey is one of those guys that, while he does have to do more, right, there is more work to be done with him, he'll be a Pro Football Hall of Famer when his career is said and done with. Of these guys that I believe have more work to be done, I would say maybe Creed Humphrey and Saquon are the ones that I have the strongest opinion on. Like, they will be in Canton when their careers are finished. That was kind of interesting. I enjoyed that. We'll see what you guys think. Send us a message, 913-586-7965. We'll have a few minutes at the end of our show here to take a look at these. One person says Joe Tooney. I think that there's an argument to be made for it. I think he could get in Canton. I just think that more work is to be done. If they win on Sunday and he's a 5-time Super Bowl champion and he gets a couple more All-Pro nods in his career, or a couple more Pro Bowls, I think that there is certainly an argument to be made for somebody like Joe Tooney. 417 says, I want to see the Chiefs run corn dog, but Mahomes is split out at wide receiver and catches a touchdown, or the Chiefs run Philly special to win the game. I mean, he's athletic enough for it, but we know how Andy Reid and the Chiefs feel about the possibility of injury surrounding Patrick Mahomes and what the fan base would do if they ran corndog and threw it to Patrick Mahomes and he somehow got hurt. Fan base would lose their collective minds over something like that. So I think that one might be a little bit too risky for a situation such as this in Super Bowl 59 on Sunday. Back for a few more minutes here in just a little bit. This is Ours with Logan Weber and Jacob Mustard on 96.5 The Fan. Few minutes left here on this Wednesday night edition of After Hours. Logan Weber here with you. My producer for tonight's show is Jacob Mustard. It was National Signing Day today across college football, so the 2025 slate of recruiting is officially wrapped. And a couple of successful recruiting classes for a few teams here in our listening area. I got it. Dan from KCK says, "Hi, Logan. The Chiefs will win by 2 touchdowns." That's a statement. That's certainly a prediction. I don't know if I can go so far as to say they'll win by 2 scores. He also says Jimmy Butler to the Warriors. KD, I think, will stay with the Suns. Yeah, he already said he doesn't want to go back to Golden State. So we'll see what happens with that. That one's kind of fascinating. The Suns seem more predicated on trying to dish out Bradley Beal. I don't know how that one's going to work, but regardless, big day of recruiting for Kansas State and Mizzou today. This one's kind of interesting. Look across at Mizzou had a massive recruiting haul, 12th in the SEC, but the number 14 recruiting class in the country. Think about that. 12th in their own conference, but the 14th best recruiting class in the nation. Donovan Olugbode from IMG Academy in Florida is a four-star. A lot of four-stars for the University of Missouri, including Matt Zollers, a four-star quarterback from Pennsylvania. He's number 9 QB in the class. So big one there for Mizzou, landing the number 14 class in the country. K-State had the number 2 class in the Big 12 and the number 42 class in the country overall, including 5-star Lincoln Cure, a 5-star tight end from Goodland, Kansas. He's the number 30 player in the class, at least according to 24/7 Sports. They also landed a 4-star safety in Noah King from Hamilton, Ohio. So those are some of the big recruits for K-State. For Kansas, Adrian Holly, a 4-star edge rusher from Michigan City, Indiana, was the crown jewel of their class, a high 3-star corner, and Chris McCorkle from Sarasota, Florida. So interesting ones there, but I know Kansas has been very focused on the transfer portal for the most part, signing guys from South Carolina and Texas and Auburn and West Virginia, UCLA. Emmanuel Henderson, a former 4-star wide receiver from Alabama, committing to Kansas, so that could be an intriguing option there. Caleb Redd, a former edge rusher from Kentucky, is another one there, a former 4-star tight end from Arizona. So a big day of recruiting for KU, K-State, and Mizzou as they try to gear themselves up for next football season. I don't think it will be much of a surprise to anybody who some of the top recruiting classes in the country were. Texas had the number 1 class in the country. Again, this is all according to 24/7 Sports. Georgia 2, Alabama 3, Ohio State 4, Oregon at 5, Michigan 6, Auburn 7, Florida 8, Texas A&M at number 9, and LSU the number 10 class in the country. So the SEC dominating college football recruiting to nobody's surprise in any stretch of the imagination. So we're a couple hours closer to the Super Bowl now. It's, you know, still three days away, folks, but we're getting there. Closer and closer to seeing if the Kansas City Chiefs can make history in Super Bowl 59. For Logan Weber, which is me, our producer Jacob Muster, we want to thank you guys for joining us here tonight on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. We'll be back with you tomorrow from 6 to 9. Make sure you join us. We out.